Okay, a very good evening. Oh, sorry, good afternoon. Yeah, to all Kayamitas, brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Today is 28 April 2024. It's a Sunday class. Oh, Sunday class is good. Sunday class, you will learn a lot more things. So you have listened to last Thursday sharing, which means I don't have to explain again, Brother Tan. Sunday class is about the Heart Sutta short note that I compiled through my sharing over 15 months in the year 2012. So this book is a very important book. You can go to the website proteo.com to get the e-book. Then you can read it, or when we do the sharing, Sui will pin it for you to see, so you don't have to worry at the moment whether you have the book or not. Okay, so as usual, let us compose our mind, develop the faith, Saddha, Virya, then mindfully we shall commence the puja chanting. Namo Bunsisi Jiao Moni Fo. Namo Bunsisi Jiao Moni Fo. Namo Bunsisi Jiao Moni Fo. Namo Guanxing Fusa. Namo Guanxing Fusa. Namo Guanxing Fusa. Namo Ami Tho Fo. Namo Ami Tho Fo. Namo Ami Tho Fo. Namo Milo Fo. Namo Milo Fo. Namo Milo Fo. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Dizang Wang Pusa. Namo Dizang Wang Pusa. Namo Dizang Wang Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Arahang sama sambuddho bhagava buddhang bhagavantang abhivademi. Swakato bhagavata dhammo dhammang namasami. Supatipanno bhagavato saukasango sanghang namami. Namo atassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo atassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Namo atassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Buddhang saranang gacchami. Dhammang saranang gacchami. Sanghang saranang gacchami. Dvitiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Dvitiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Dvitiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Panati pata viramani sikkha padang samadhiyami. Adina dana viramani sikkha padang samadhiyami. Kame sumichachara viramani sikkha padang samadhiyami. Musavada viramani sikkha padang samadhiyami. Suramiraya majapamadatana viramani sikkha padang samadhiyami. Sadhu sadhu Sadhu. Okay, now let us pay respect. Triple jam. Bedang pujemi. Damang pujemi. Sanghang pujemi. Just relax body and mind. Maintain some more attention. Or attentiveness. When you are attentive without thought, you are paying attention. That is actually the correct way of listening. But when you listen, listen with the silent mind. Don't allow your thinking to come in and interfere. Because once that one become like habitual, you will fail to listen attentively. When you listen, you just listen. Then when the understanding is there, you don't worry. What you listen can never like cloud you or cause you to have doubt or what. What you listen will be the truth, the reality. Then whether that truth, that reality is from somebody who don't have the understanding or have the understanding, your nature will know. Initially, maybe for those who have not developed the understanding or the awakening, what you listen to, you may not be able to differentiate it so clearly, but don't worry. Whatever you don't understand beyond your capacity to understand, just have an open mind. Don't like be too eager to comment or criticize or develop certain negativity of mind state. Because according to the teaching of the Buddha, when we listen, we must listen with understanding, means following Noble Eightfold Path. No negativity of mind state. Don't develop any unnecessary like negative tendency towards what you listen, because people are just the way they are. The world is the world. Condition like that, things will be like that. So we just accept them for what they are. Then if it's the truth, it benefits you, you can take it in. If it's something that you don't understand, just have an open mind. Then reflect, contemplate. If you do it, does it harm you? Does it harm others? If it doesn't harm you, doesn't harm others, then no harm trying it out. So when you try it out, then if it's the truth, we will stand up to investigation. So all this, very easy to develop the understanding. What you need is mindfulness, awareness. When you are mindful and aware, the thought has no power over you. But that one needs stability. You need to develop it until it's very stable. Then when that stability of mindfulness develops, then the cultivator of the way who has the stability of mindfulness can actually see things as they are. Observe with the silent mind to develop the understanding. And through that, they will straighten their views and develop the clear understanding of the teaching of the Dhamma. Then once they have that, wisdom will dawn upon them. They will start to develop all this understanding on their own. That's why technically, when you are mindful, leading to heedfulness, you don't need a teacher. Because the Buddha in the Dhammapada verse 21 mentioned it very clearly. Heedfulness is the path to the deathless. The heedful never die. Whereas heedlessness is the path to the dead. The heedless are as if they. So when you are able to train your mind to be mindful, stabilize it to be ever mindful, then use it to cultivate the meditation as taught by the Buddha, it becomes apamada or heedfulness. That is what Dhammapada verse 23 is all about. The constantly meditative ever mindful and steadfast one. If you hold on to these two, yeah, stability of mindfulness, ever mindful, constantly meditating, and you hold on to these two cultivation, then you will realize the supreme bond-free nibbana. And that is precisely what it is. That's why cultivation is very easy when you understand. When you don't understand, you can get lost and entangle yourself with a lot of what they call unnecessary. In Mandarin, they say 走冤枉路. In English, I don't know how to the equivalent is what. You like lost track of the cultivation. You do a lot of so-called thought-based meditation that led you astray, and it doesn't bring you back to the cultivation. That's why in Mandarin, the description is good. 走冤枉路 means yinwanglu. In English is what? Yinwang is what? Means the path you tread on, or the way you develop the meditation is not the correct one. So it leads you astray. But there is a good description in Mandarin. Yinwanglu means you're not supposed to go that way, but you went that way. That's why it end up wasting a lot of your time and effort in trying to develop the understanding. Okay, anyway, that one is just explanation. Invocation to the devas. In this universe, in their entirety, let the deities or devas come here. Let them hear the good teaching of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and release, Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. Then I will chant the Devaratana, the Pali version. Samanta Chakravalesu Atra Gacchantu Devata Saddhammang Munirajasa Sunantu Sakkamoggadang Dhammasvanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhammasvanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhammasvanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Namo Atasa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa Namo Atasa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa Namo Atasa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa Iti Beso Bhagava Arahang Sama Sambuddho Vija Charana Sampanno Sugato Lokavido Anuttaro Purisa Dhamma Sarati Satta Deva Manusana Buddho Bhagavati Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Sanditiko Akaliko Ehipaseko Opanayiko Pajatang Veditabo Vinohiti Supatipanno Bhagavato Savakasango Ujupatipanno Bhagavato Savakasango Nyayapatipanno Bhagavato Savakasango. สามีจิปาติปันโนภะคะวะโตสาวกสังโฆยะถิตังจัตตาริปุริสายุคานิอัตตปุริสปุคะลาเอสาภะคะวะโตสาวกสังโฆอาหุเนโยปาหุเนโยตะเกเนโยอัญจาลิกาลานิโยอนุตตรังปุญญังเขตังโลกาสาติสาธุสาธุสาธุ Then now you continue from where we stop at the Heart Sutta sharing. We are on page 24. So this is part 2 of Heart Sutta lesson 4. Our sharing last time, we used the commentaries from Master Xuan Hua. So in bracket introduction 1, page Roman 10 to 12 of Master Xuan Hua's commentary. So that one referred to Master Xuan Hua's commentary. It's the English translation. Okay. So now I will read to you Master Xuan Hua's very unique birth and life history. On Kuan Yin Bodhisattva's birthday, the master dreamed that an old woman wearing a patchwork robe and a string of beads appear to guide him. This unique birth and life history of Master Xuan Hua provided the condition of Brother Teo to also share a bit of his unique spiritual affinity and encounters with Kuan Yin Bodhisattvas in his early years of cultivation in the year 1986. And the details are as described by him during the sharing on that day. For detail, please refer to the web link or the 16 gigabyte USB. This is the one, Cindy, Sui An did it up on 16 gigabyte. A lot of my talk audio file were inside there that contains the recording as produced by Brother Sui An. So if you want a copy, you can get from Brother Suyan. Then if you want to buy the recorder, you can inquire from Suyan. Or you can buy your own portable one where you can listen. You only need the USB port. Okay. You continue. In 1986, Brother Teo and his whole family took refuge under Master Xuan Hua. And apart from taking the five precepts, the other condition is to finish off the 10,000 bow or reciting homage to my original teacher, Namo Sakyamuni Buddha, within 3 months. Pratio completed it within less than 2 months. So this one is the English translation. What Master Xuan Hua told us was the Mandarin version. We pay our respect. Then we recite in front of the Buddha or any great being. Namo Bun Si, Si Jia Moni Fo. Then we continue to repeat it. So every time is one bow, full prostration, then you come out. Then after that, you do again. So we have to finish up 10,000 of this bow to qualify as a refuge, a disciple of Xuan Hua. So at that time, because my faith was very strong, I did it in less than 2 months. But it doesn't take that long, actually. I remember every day, it took me about 15 minutes or so on it. But during that time, you can bow a few hundred bows within that 15 minutes or so. Then, as you develop the bowing, you must develop the understanding. The awareness and the movement must harmonize and move as one. And that is sati. But initially, don't worry. Initially, you cannot get it right. You know, most people are lost in thought. They think a lot. So what I did was I already had some sati at that time. That's why when I did it, because of the faith and the understanding, it came very naturally. And I suddenly realized, just like anapanasati, the mindfulness just set in. My body and mind move as one. As I recite, Namo Pan Si Se Chia Moni Fo, my awareness was with the kaya and the recitation. That's why kaya nupasana. Yeah. So I did it until I realized the body and mind just move as one. No thought at all. Just, yeah. Of course, initially that recitation is still there. Yeah. But after a while, you can do away with the recitation. Then it just go in and come out. Go in and come out. Yeah. So have faith and just do. Then when the body and mind move as one, your sati will develop. Once the sati develop, you will understand what that sati is. No word involvement. No thought involvement. Just as a courtesy reminder to all Kayamita, when you attend the Zoom session, you're supposed to mute your mind unless you want to say something, then you can on it. But I understand sometimes Kayamita unknowingly touch the button, then it unmute by itself. So what is happening is all your background sound from your place will be fitted into the Zoom. Then it will affect the recording and all those things. That's why sometimes Sui has to play the role to mute for you. But sometimes you didn't know that she mute for you and you go and press one more time, then it unmute again. But don't worry. Eh? After a while, especially for those who are new, you just be patient. Eh? You will learn all this on your own. Eh? Okay, you'll continue. You continue to bow until the body and mind become one. Then you will understand what sati is. Sati is not the so-called commonly thought of. Yeah, a lot of people define sati or believe sati is that one that can know, that one that can perceive. They think that is sati. That is not sati. The thought has come out. The moment you know it is the thought noting. The moment you perceive, the thought has already come out. The mundane mind has already come out. Mindful or aware means that nature without words is one with the phenomena, like kaya nupassana. That's why the Buddha says standing aware means your awareness and the posture as one, no thought. Then walking aware, that movement and the awareness as one. Sitting aware, same, that movement, your awareness is with it. Then lying down also same, the whole movement, the awareness is with it. Then after that, the four posture becomes stable. Then all the connecting movement from the four posture, how you from the sitting posture arise and do the standing, then walking, then how you at night, or when you want to relax, you lie down and rest. All these four posture, they have their intermittent connecting movement. That's the reason why under kaya nupassana, the Buddha asks you to start with anapanasati, mindfulness of the in and out breath, to train yourself to anchor your heedless thinking mind onto the breath so that it does not run away or become heedlessly lost in thought. So you need something to anchor the thinking mind, the mundane mind. Then in order to stop the thinking, you develop mindfulness. Means breathing in, aware. Aware means the awareness and the breath move as one. then breathing out the awareness and the breath move as well. So when you continue to naturally let the breath move on its own, then the awareness just follow. Then sooner or later, your mind will synchronize. Then without thought, you feel very calm, very peaceful. Pity will arise. And that is, you develop mindfulness. The moment you become mindful, your mind become calm. Where there is no thought, no distraction, nothing. But initially, it's not easy. It may take a while. So patiently develop it. So for those who have affinity with anapanasati, it's in fact the easiest object of meditation to have. Why? Because like the Buddha said, the breath is always with us, unless you no longer have breath, means you your form and mind no longer exist. And your breath will not stop as long as you are alive. So this one is always with you. So the object of meditation, you no need to search for it. You just relax and settle down. Then the other thing is, that breath is always in the present moment one. It cannot be in the past or in the future one. It's always there. So as long as you are relaxed, you maintain the awareness and follow the breathing, your sati will develop. That's why the Buddha called mindfulness of the in and out breath anapanasati. Sati is mindfulness. Anapana is in and out breath. So mindful of the in and out breath. Always remember that. Not to note here, note there, fix here or focus here or concentrate here. No, just mindful. Then after you stabilize it, the Buddha teaches you the second category of kaya nupasana cultivation. The second category is when you are living life active. From anapanasati, you move on to the mindfulness of the four posture that I mentioned just now. Sitting, aware. Standing, aware. Walking, aware. Lying down, aware. Any of the four posture, maintain awareness first or mindfulness first. You can do that, then the rest will follow. Then you can develop the intention to be mindful and aware. Now, initially, when you start, I can still recall, you can never be aware for even 5 minutes in a whole day. Yeah. Because split second, the thought just wander off. They call it the wandering mind. It becomes heedless, lost in thought, it wanders off. Then you are not with the moment anymore. You are not with the moment anymore. Because this heedless thinking has been there for so long. So what you need to do is determine to be aware. Means come back to the center of your heart there and aware from there. Yeah. So whatever you do, maintain awareness, stay there. Yeah. Then what happens is, after the four postures stabilize already, the Buddha will introduce a third category of cultivation. He said, you must develop sati sampajana. Not only mindfulness with clear comprehension. Clear comprehension, there are four. First is clear comprehension or sincerity of purpose. You must be very sincere in cultivation. You are here to develop mindfulness, to develop wisdom, not to develop psychic ability, not to become very powerful or very special. You're supposed to develop the mindfulness to realize that he know you, he know me. This form of mind is not really what you think you are. This one is dependent, originating, condition arising, cause of phenomena. It's not a permanent, unchanging entity that you can cling on to, hold on to, grasp on to and say, this is me, this is I. Therefore, all this can be mine. That is a delusion. So when it comes to sati sampajana, mindfulness and clear comprehension, you must be aware of all the connecting movement between the four posture. That's why in the sutta is mentioned, standing aware, looking forward aware, bending, stretching, turning all aware, means mindful of all action, all movement in the present moment. That is what my teacher Ajayantra taught me in the early 1988, I think, 87 to 88. He said the highest meditation, we choose aware every action, every movement in the present moment. That one was a breakthrough for me. When I heard that thing, I reflected. Then I realized I tried it. I hardly aware in the midst of life for even 5 minutes a day. But when I'm in anapanasati, no problem. I can be mindful of the in and out breath for hours. That was not a problem. But then, anapanasati, if you don't understand the real sati, you will go into absorption too deep. You will enter apana samadhi. And the mindfulness of the in and out breath becomes so strong, so continuous, until it becomes absorption, apana. And you are locked inside there, completely still and no thought. And when you draw your breath, the mindfulness really, all the thought cannot arise. Yeah, this is a conditioned state. Conditioned state means you are already deep in samadhi. You are no longer at upachara samadhi or excess samadhi, excess concentration. Before you enter into apana samadhi, so that is what upachara is. So when you are too deep, the samadhi becomes too strong. So what happens is when you are in that state, it's like you are enlightened. Because no thought at all. That mind is also tranquil still. Because the thought cannot move. Because it's a conditioned state. The samadhi is too strong. So what happens is when you are in that state, the mental hindrance, the five mental hindrance, they are all suppressed. They cannot come out. So your sensual desire, your ill will, your sloth and torpor, your restlessness of mind and your doubt, all this fine, it cannot arise because of that apana samadhi that suppress all this. It's like the Buddha gave the analogy of a glass of clear water. If you let the dust settle down, the water appears clear on top. Then the dust settles down. But the moment you stir the clear water, what happens is the dust all float up. So suppression means when your samadhi becomes too strong, or especially those who do one-pointedness, thought-based samatha meditation, they focus at a point or their object of meditation until everything is killed into one point and the energy build up. That's why they develop jhana and all those things. So what happens is when they are in that state, the defilement or mental hindrance, they cannot arise because they are all suppressed. So because of that, you cannot test yourself. You cannot know whether you are on the right track or not. And most of these people who develop thought-based meditation, of the two evil, the mindfulness one is safer. Now, the mindfulness one is absorption only. You go into very strong absorption. But there is no energy build up like the one-pointedness one. So this is what happened. So when I heard what Ajayantra, my teacher, told me, the highest meditation is we choose aware every moment, every action in the present moment. Then I tested it. Then I realized as a person living life in the free state of mind, not in anapanasati, I was hardly aware for even 5 minutes in the whole day. Because split second is gone, split second is gone. So I determined to be aware. And That one was through sheer determination, determined to aware. Well, I like make very strong aspiration to determine to return that awareness back to my heart until my heart energy build up. Build up until it's too strong. So I had to slow down my cultivation. But then the strange thing is, when this awareness energy build up, suddenly I did it until it was so stable and so strong. The heart there, in the center there, it made me aware by itself. The heart there, aware, aware, aware. And throughout the day, I aware, aware, aware. At that time, I haven't located the gateway. Then the moment, not long after that, and I met my last teacher or my last guide who told me where the gateway is. The moment I knew where the gateway is, all my energy that I developed through my own mindfulness cultivation and practice, they melt inside there and become pure energy. And the whole nature just open up. Yeah. That's why I become different after that. After that, the nature moved by itself. And a lot of things happen. The rest is history. So what I want to share with you is, initially, determine to be aware is very important. But later on, after I developed the cultivation and after everything came back to me, my spiritual nature understanding of human, then I realized this sati can also be developed in a different way. Of course, what I teach you on is a very good way if you don't have the understanding that I am recently, the past few years, sharing with Kayamita, the four support. The four support is very important. In actual fact, when I was doing that training of mindfulness and awareness, I already have the first three support. I already know how to relax, maintain awareness, and stabilize the awareness before I even met my last teacher. Okay. That's why I didn't want to meet up with him. But the strange thing happened, though. Six or seven times, the condition keep on arising. Then after the sixth time, I already knew, manager knew. I don't know who this person is, but my nature tell me I must meet him. Yeah. Then the moment I make that decision to meet him, I really met him. And the moment I met him, he held my hand, I held his hand. He know who I am, I know who he is. Then from there, everything just fall into place. It's like meant to be. So all this understanding will unfold. Then now, what I have taught you all, the four support to develop awareness-based meditation is the easiest. Relax body and mind. When you relax, no thought involved. Your body and mind at ease. Then you maintain awareness means the mind that is without thought, silent, can stay in that state. But most people cannot. That's why I use the word maintain awareness. If a thought arise, wander off, bring it back. Maintain awareness. Don't try to know, don't try to do anything. Just aware, finish. Aware, finish. Because as a human being, we have a physical body with our senses. The six senses inside the physical body. The eye, the ear, the nose, the tongue, the tactile, and the brain. So these six, together with the consciousness drive inside, depending on where you locate your consciousness, at which sense basis, the respective sense or consciousness will arise. If you focus it on the seeing and the eye, then seeing consciousness will arise. If it's at the ear, hearing conscience arise. Then likewise, smell, taste, tactile, and thought consciousness. So these six centers, they are very active within the human form and mind. So our awareness-based meditation is to silence our mind to develop the awareness of the activity that is going on. so that you understand what is going on within life, within every moment of existence. And the only thing that can trigger our consciousness is the sixth sense basis. That's why awareness is very important. If you are aware, you can stay there. Then from that sense base, you can see how the consciousness arises and what happens after consciousness arrives, what you do, your mental activity, and how you perceive through your brain, your memory, then how the content of consciousness went in. All this you will understand. Then how you stir your mind, how you react, how you create all those movements. It's like your awareness is silently observing all this. That's why this is the silent mind developing understanding. It's sitting as they are. The activity, the movement. Then you start to understand who are you, what are you, and how you function as a human being. How you stir your mind, how you react to sense experience, how you become emotional, how fear arise, how worry, anxiety, sorrow, lamentation, how they arise. All this will manifest. That's why sati is very powerful. Without sati, you cannot be aware. You cannot understand all this. Then you cannot understand the teaching. You cannot break free. But once you develop mindfulness and awareness, you can understand. That's why when Xuan Hua asked me to do the bowing, it's in fact a blessing in disguise. It was like a shortcut. Because straight away, I knew what sati is. So that time, well, I bow until body and mind as one. Then when I was so stable, you know what happened? Huh? When I come out of the bowing, all my kaya activity and movement, the mindfulness is one with it. It's like, hey, how come now no more thought? No. All the movement and the awareness become one. Then to me, kaya nupasana like very easy, you know. Sati sampajana like very easy, you know. In fact, I also came to realize how this can also happen when I do anapanasati, mindfulness of the inner mind. Well, I was very good at it when I was young in the uni in the year 1975, 76. When I did it, it come by itself, the anapanasati. And the first time I meditated, I remember I went into it for 4 hours without realizing that it was already 4 hours. To me, it was maximum maybe half an hour. But when I looked at my watch, it was 4 hours, you know, sitting there. And that was the first time I sit. No, I never do any sitting before. Then after that, the mind becomes so absorbed, so still. Actually, I went into the formless rhyme. And time appear like very short. So all this can manifest. Then later on, I continue to develop the anapanasati, then the metta, until my metta was so powerful, loving kindness meditation, metta bhavana, until the animal can feel them, the dog and all those things, the non-human, they can feel them. And there was so much joy, so much understanding. But I was in that state for quite a while until I met Ajayantra. Then I reversed my practice. From anapana, I released out the apana samadhi. I went into daily mindfulness. Then what happened was when I went into daily mindfulness, until my mindfulness was developed and stabilized, then I realized when I sit again to do anapanasati, it becomes so easy, you know. Like the anapanasati just come to me, you know. Doesn't take time at all. The moment I sat, it's just the mindfulness just developed and I become very calm, very quiet, very tranquil, and very still. Then what happened was because of my past cultivation, I don't have doubt. I don't have any like curiosity when the anapanasati settled down. But after I developed the daily mindfulness, I no longer in absorption. So I was in that state of tranquility and stillness, you know, until my mind became very quiet. No more breathing. it becomes so subtle, like normal breathing. So naturally, I know how to stay there at the breath there. Even no more breathing, I just stay there. Then I realized the awareness didn't run, no. The awareness didn't run, no. That's why you don't go and listen to some of the Theravada tradition teaching. When the breath become very quiet or when the rising falling become very quiet, you go and do sitting touching. Actually, when you go and do sitting touching, you are verbalizing again. No? You are creating thought process again. So try not to do that. Find out for yourself. There is no right, no wrong. There are people who don't understand. They thought it's too subtle. They have to make it more gross so that they can detect their rising, falling, or breath again. But if you do that, you wasted that golden opportunity to progress further. Now, what you should do is you should continue to silence everything and let the awareness stay there until the mind enters sati. Mind enters sati means your sati or mindfulness or awareness has become so stable until it doesn't run anymore. And then that mind and sati is one. Then after that, I realized in that state of anapanasati, everything is like magnified. My slightest movement or straightening of my body or whatever, then everything that I want to know, wherever I locate the awareness, it magnifies, you know, like become very sensitive. Then after that, when I come out of it, exactly like the bowing, every action, every movement in the present moment, my mindfulness and awareness is one with you. You know? Then I realize, hey, this is beautiful. This is what sati in daily life is all about. Sati sampajana. So mindfulness and clear comprehension, all action, all movement in the present moment, I was able to do it. And I did it non-stop throughout the day. Sometimes I can even develop the sati and go into my sleep. And I can see what happened during the sleep. The subconscious, unconscious mental release and the so-called dream movement. Oh, my nature can see, my awareness can see. Then the strange thing is, when I come out of it, as if I wake up from my normal sleep, that time like normal sleep, it can be like at night I lie down, 10 something or 11. And the next morning, fully aware inside there, until 6 a.m. Yeah. And the strange thing is, when I come out of that so-called sleep, I'm not tired or no. And the same thought come out or no. It's not like I went into the subconscious or the unconscious, then when I woke up, the consciousness come back. No, the full awareness that is aware of all the movement and that same awareness came out, like I didn't sleep. And that time, I don't have to wash my face. No. I didn't really sleep. I was fully awake. So the power of mindfulness and awareness is such that all these are possible. Then when you can do that, you are very, very close to understanding the teaching and awakening. I remember that time, 1988-89. In fact, most of it was towards the second half of 88. The mindfulness was so stable, so clear. That's why I knew mindfulness, awareness is the key. Without this, you cannot understand. You cannot break free. And from there, everything happened. Yeah. Okay, we go back to the sharing. Huh? So this part is extra for cultivator, for you to develop the understanding and the faith. Huh? Okay, the 10,000 bow, I already explained. The Mandarin version is Namo, which homage to the Namo. Ben Si is original teacher. Si Jia Moni Fo is Sakya Moni Buddha. So that one, I did it in less than 2 months, 10,000 bow. So for 10,000 bow, if you were to do it in, let's say, 1 month. One month is 30 days. 30 times 300 is 9,000. So maybe you need to do slightly more than 300 per day. But if over 2 months, you can do about 200 plus bao a day, or 200 bao a day will be sufficient. You can stagger it out if you don't have the time, or if sometimes if you bow until those who have gone through, they will know. I remember I bow until my knee there, that almost 2 months, my knee there, there is like a mark, a mark. But don't worry about all this mark. So last time sitting also same. There I cross my leg, when I don't go full lotus or half lotus. I normal Chinaman style. I just cross my leg until the what they call, I cannot show you, because at the leg there, below the what that point you call
ankle,
but it's at the edge. There are 2 months per leg, 2 months. Then there was one monk, I think from Australia, Ajahn Jagaru. He disrobed already. I don't know whether you know him. I happened to meet him when he was here, and I become his kapia and took him to even Malacca and all those things. Then later we become very close. He was very observant, though. Yeah, when we were discussing some Dhamma, he overheard. Then he heard us mentioning out of the body experience and all those things. Yeah. Then he talked to me, you know, very strange. He talked to me. Then he asked me, the very first thing he asked me, where did you get the mark on your leg? Then I knew already, he very observant. Oh, I said, through meditating. Very good, isn't it? The marks are very clear. Then later on, I recorded his talk. Well, that time at Brickfield, I was in charge of recording all the Dhamma talk. And he was very good. He was one of the few Theravada monk that have very strong metta and a lot of loving kindness and mindfulness, also quite strong. That's why I can click with him and discuss a lot of things with him. So that was the history partner. So now we go back. Yeah. Okay. So according to Brother Theo, this bowing, if done mindfully, and with very strong faith, sadha or virya. Virya means spiritual zeal or spiritual tenacity, can lead one to a very stable daily mindfulness very quickly. So this way also can, the four support also can. Or what they call through sheer determination to be aware, also you can do it. Then there is a question, is bowing another technique to develop mindfulness that is similar to walking and sitting meditation? So my reply was, the understanding of it is very important. There is not much meaning to your cultivation if you just follow instruction without understanding. This statement, you all must understand. If you do without understanding, chances is you will not progress. You don't know what you are doing in the name of meditation. And you don't want to find out what is the meditation as taught by the Buddha. And because of that, you just try your luck. You just do and follow instruction, thinking that by following the instruction, you are doing the meditation. And what is often told to you is, you do it long enough, you become enlightened. I mean, that statement is very difficult to understand, but it's a good way of convincing people. But if you do it with understanding, it's totally different. Means you have clear understanding of what this thing is, then you become very different. It's just like in life, you have a problem, okay? Okay? Then you want to seek an answer to that problem. Yeah. But you will admit, maybe one teacher or one monk or somebody who can supposed to have the understanding to teach you. He said, meditate and your problem will be gone. But he doesn't even want to find out what is your problem, etc. And he doesn't even have the understanding to explain to you what is the meditation as taught by the Buddha. He just say meditate. Then he give you a series of instruction to do things. And you calmly believe that is meditation. So you haven't even find out what your problem is. How can you resolve your problem? Isn't it? That's why when you meditate, your understanding means you understand that you are seeking wisdom to liberate your mind, to free your mind. So whatever instruction they give you, it can lead to that, then it's well and good. But if just a series of instruction to do things, then you should inquire, what am I doing all this for? Even like anapanasati. But if they explain to you, this is to develop sati, so that you can have clarity of mind to observe, then to insight in the phenomenon, and to then the whole thing link up, then that is what I am supposed to do. It leads to stability of sati, leading to apamada or heedfulness. And this is in the teaching. Yeah. Okay, we go back. Yes, sir. So once you meditate understanding, you become different. You must understand why you bow. And what are you doing in the name of so-called meditation? That is, do not just follow the instruction to do a certain thing via any method or technique, etc., thinking that when you are doing all those so-called method and technique, then you are meditating. The real meditation as taught by the Buddha cannot begin unless one has developed the training of the mind to be heedful with sati or mindfulness within. The various objects of meditation used in conjunction with the various method and technique of meditation are only initial skillful means used to train the mind or anchor the mind so that it is not heedlessly lost in thought most of the time. The main purpose of the object of meditation is to anchor the mind so that one is always within the moment, mindful and aware of the object of meditation without thought. Once this training is done, the trained mind will become very quiet, very still, silent, without thought, with awareness within. And such a mind is a meditative mind. And such a mind can see things as they are without any concept, idea, or words. When the above is understood, then any method or technique can also be used to train the mind to be heedful initially. But finally, we need to develop the ultimate meditative mind with silent inner awareness, where the mind must have no dwelling, as per the Diamond Sutta. Then one must let go of the meditation object and silence one's mind to develop the more refined mindfulness within. It's like swimming. The float is like an initial skillful means equivalent to your object of meditation, to help keep one afloat. But as long as one still holds on to the float, then one can never understand the real swimming or the actual swimming. But to swim with the float and to swim without the float are two totally different experiences. So now you understand. Eh? Bowing a reverential salutation is one of the 10 meritorious actions. And it is a very important virtue that comes with so many benefits and advantages. It is part of the opening and closing puja or devotional practice as recommended by the Buddha. To help one establish the faith or sadha in the Buddha and his teaching, followed by the spiritual zeal or tenacity or virya, and the development of sati or mindfulness, which is the third spiritual faculty within the five mental faculty. One can then bow mindfully And with understanding, we are a composed mind with strong sadha virya. Bowing is not idol worshipping, but instead it is reverential salutation done out of great respect and gratitude for someone who has taught us so well, like the Buddha, who is the fully enlightened one, perfect in wisdom and virtue. So it is a meritorious action. The field of merit is immeasurable if it is done with understanding to the worthy or enlightened ones. Means you pay respect to the great beings, the worthy ones, the enlightened ones. Such merits can be made use of to arise a causes and condition for us to progress quickly along the path of Dhamma via invocation or via invoking the power of merits. Apart from helping us to develop the spiritual faculty of Sadha, Virya, and Sati, bowing can also help us to cultivate humility and help exercise our body while establishing ourselves in mindfulness training. Also, according to the Buddha, four things grow if we pay respect sincerely to our elders and worthy ones. The four things are ayo, wano, sukang, palang. You always hear of this Pali word when the monk, after receiving your offering and whatever, they will chant the blessing for your protection. So the normally chant blessing are these four. Ayo means long life. Wano or wana is fair complexion, having fair complexion. Then sukang is happiness or joy. And palang is strength, both spiritual and physical strength. All these four blessings are very important for having the good life. So this shows to us the importance and beauty of developing reverential salutation as a training to develop mindfulness, because there is a lot of merits or virtue that comes with it, a lot of benefits and advantages that comes with it. That's why Mahayana, they bow a lot. They chant a lot, round four, keep on doing the walking meditation, chanting meditation. So all this, if you have the understanding and develop it well, then you will develop progress. Then 2.3. Can you show us how to bow, how to do the bow? So this one is very interesting. So anyway, is in the question is asked, is it the Theravada tradition's 5-point prostration or the Mahayana's way of standing up, then go down to prostrate and come out again? So these are the normal two type of respect or reverential salutation that is done in the Theravada tradition and the Mahayana tradition. So my answer is very simple. Whichever way that suits you more, use it. Because the Mahayana will like to do the full prostration, where that is what they have been taught and they are comfortable with it. Whereas the Theravada tradition is mainly the 5-point prostration. And if that is what you are used to, use it. So I said the most important thing is when you bow, do it mindfully, with very strong faith and virya, and do it with proper understanding. Always remember, one can only do one thing at a time. That is, either you are mindful within the moment in silent awareness without thought, or you are lost in thought, hence heedless. Bowing mindfully means body and mind move as one in harmony without thought. When the mind is composed and without the five mental hindrances, mindfulness will be there naturally. Because there is no mental hindrance, so there is nothing to hinder your mind or entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness. So develop the faith, compose the mind, then chant the salutation to Sakyamuni Buddha. Namo Bhinsu Sakyamuni Po. And then bow mindfully to develop the sati or mindfulness within. Yeah. After a while, if you are sincere, patient, and doing it with understanding, then it can bring about the condition for sati or mindfulness to arise and stabilize. Mindfulness arises through understanding and perseverance. And when mindfulness is firmly established, there will be so much joy. The mind is so still, so silent, so light, so composed, yet fully aware within throughout the day. In every movement and every action, there is so much clarity and awareness within the heart. It then starts to see things as they are. And the direct knowledge and vision of the reality keep on arising. So this is the power of sati or mindfulness. When you are able to stabilize it, it has this power. Yeah. In every movement and every action, there is so much clarity and awareness within the heart area. It then starts to see things as they are. Then the direct knowledge and vision of the reality keep on arising, means wisdom, understanding keep on arising. Things that are there all this while is three universal characteristics of anicca, dukkha, and anatta, which the normal living being never see, suddenly become very clear to you. This is the reason why Brother Theo always said to us, truth is everywhere. In the midst of life and nature, why can't you see? For those who see, they always see. So here, truth means the universal characteristics of anicca, dukkha, anatta. Really, when you are mindful and aware, the characteristic anicca, dukkha, anatta is everywhere in the midst of life and nature. Every phenomenon, every activity that arises exhibit the characteristic. That's why the silent mind can just insight and awaken. And it understands so clearly. And 2.4, the three great Buddhist traditions. Are they all the same or are they different? So there was a question. Are the teachings of the three great Buddhist traditions of Theravada, Mahayana, and Vajrayana all the same or are they different? Yeah, what do you think? Let me have a drink. Anybody want to attempt answering or not? You can come in. Nobody, yeah? Okay, I will read on so that you can understand. You see, there is a lot of so-called lack of understanding within the Buddhist community or within this three tradition. So now, normally what I heard was, or I came to know in the early days of my cultivation was, different traditions emphasize their strong point and good point, and sometimes they try to express certain not so good thing about the other tradition. But don't worry, if you understand, they are all very beautiful teaching. And it has their similarity. So look at the similarity rather than the difference. But when you don't understand, they may appear very different. But when you understand, they are actually one teaching. I read on, then you may understand. The essence of the Buddha's teaching, like the Four Noble Truths, which includes the Noble Eightfold Path, are essentially all the same for all the three traditions. True or not? Yeah? There are also you have Four Noble Truths, yeah? Noble Eightfold Path, yeah? And the three turning. Yeah? Mahayana also you have. Vajrayana also you have. It is only how they approach it that makes it appear to be very different because of different commentaries and interpretation of the sutta. There are words and terminology used. And all this complicates the matter further. as words are subject to various interpretation. What is more important is not to argue and create any unnecessary or unhealthy division and misunderstanding within the various traditions, but instead to have an open mind and avoid all negativity. Make use of whatever that is relevant, useful, and suitable for each of us to progress along the path of Dhamma. We are following the advice of the Buddha to the Kalamas, as stated in the Kalama Sutta. Harmony, love, and understanding following the Noble Eightfold Path to resolve all issues amicably is very important. That is, no more negativity. So here I have to explain a bit what is the Kalama Sutta. Here, when I share, I describe and I explain. But in the short note, it was just the sentence. So there is a group of people they call the Kalamas during the time of the Buddha. So these are simple people who actually look forward to receiving teachers and learn from them the truth. Then one day, the Buddha also passed by there. Then one of the Kalamas asked the Buddha, he said, "Venerable, there are a lot of teachers that come and they claim that their teaching is the best, is the only truth or whatever. Then how can we know, or how do we judge based on our limited understanding?" So the Buddha happily answered the Kalamas. He said, "Listen, O Kalamas," he said, "whatever teacher that come by and tell you whatever teaching is the truth or what," he said, "the first thing is don't believe." He said, "Even I come and tell you anything, don't believe," he said. "And even they tell you which holy book say what, which holy," he said, "no need to believe. What is more important is," he said, "you ask yourself two questions," he said. "So what are the two questions?" He said, "Whatever they teach you, ask you to do, ask yourself, does it harm you by doing it, or does it harm others? If it doesn't harm you and harm others, by all means, no harm cultivating it. Like if he advised you to keep your precept, not to kill and all those things, no harm. Can abide by it. But if there's anything that asks you to violate the basic five precepts, then you have to ask yourself, there is karmic implication. You reap what you sow. Do good begets good. Do evil begets evil. Your life, you decide, is that what you want? If by doing it, it causes you harm, means karmic implication, hurt you, hurt others, then avoid doing it. Then the teaching just actually end there. But later on, after I developed the mindfulness, I realized we should apply this Kalama Sutta to our own thought also. Sometimes our thought, before you become enlightened, is full of selfishness and delusion. And if you don't question the thought, it can take you to Holland and create a lot of coming down forward or coming negativity. Because before you become enlightened, before you have the Dhamma, a lot of our thoughts are full of selfish intent, full of this what they call emotional negativity, especially envy, jealousy, likes and dislikes, then a lot of what they call craving, desire for power and all those things. So Once that thought arise, yeah, like it tell you, this guy, he hurt you before. Don't trust him. He deceived you before. Don't trust him. Then normally, as a normal human being, we tend to listen to the thought, yeah, la, last time this guy did that to me. So you develop what? You develop enmity towards that person. You start to dislike that person. Then you perceive him with negativity. Then the evil, the anger, the delusion continue to unfold and manifest in you. That's how you get into trouble. Because no matter how bad that person is, he's just the way he is. Karmically, it's like that. Conditioned like that, things will be like that. Deluded people do deluded things. Selfish people do selfish things. Angry people do angry things. They are just the way they are. So accept them for what they are. So do not create any unnecessary negativity. So don't listen to your thought. Just tell yourself, enough, you have deceived me long enough. You develop all the wrong view for me to create the, what they call reaction of mind, stirring of mind, the duality that trap me, entangle me in life. So now, I want to reverse all this through an understanding. I want to investigate into it. I will develop mindfulness to be mindful and aware of what is going on. Then I straighten my view to free myself from all this entanglement. Then when you develop that understanding and awakening, you realize all these are wrong thoughts. What are wrong thoughts? Thoughts that condition your fear, your worry, your anxiety, your sorrow, your lamentation, your misery, your unhappiness, your insecurity. All these are wrong thoughts. Then why do you hold on to it, cling on to it? Because we lack understanding. We lack the Dhamma understanding. And all these wrong thoughts are the thought with the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion within their content. Whereas right thought are beautiful, virtuous, good thought that is free of the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. That's why in the Noble Eightfold Path teaching, the fourth noble truth, the Buddha said, if you cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path based on right view, giving rise to right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, and the four right effort, etc., then you will be following the correct path, acting according to Dhamma understanding, which is the Dhamma way to free yourself. So Noble Eightfold Path is the path that will lead to the end of all suffering. That's why the Buddha said, if you cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, it will lead to the end of all suffering. And these are right view leading to right thought, right speech, right action. That's why everything is right, perfect, no evil, no greed, no hatred, no delusion, no evil roots. It cannot create karmic negativity. This is how we cultivate and act. So when we have the understanding of what constitutes evil and we are mindful, then we can be mindful of the mental intention within every action, speech, and thought process that we carry. That's how we cultivate the advice of the Buddha. We are avoiding all evil through cultivating mindfulness to have the awareness to avoid all evil. When we understand what constitutes evil and we are mindful, then we can deal with it. The five ways to overcome unwholesome thought, as taught by the Buddha in the teaching, they are all in this Art Sutta book. Later on, we will be covering them as we move on. So today, I just summarize it. Okay, more or less, we have to end already. Okay, I think with the explanation of the Kalama Sutta, so now you know. The two questions, if I follow, does it harm me, hurt me? If I follow, does it harm others? Yeah. If doesn't, then no harm. Yeah. It is something that you can investigate into it and put it into practice. Yeah. But if you detect any evil roots behind the thing that they advise you to do, miss, when you perform those actions, can be action, speech, or thought process, it gives rise to negativity because the evil roots are there. Then it will harm you and harm others. So that is not something you should follow, you should avoid. So even your thought tell you, sometimes selfish thought, they can come in the form of this guy, you know, don't worry lah, small thing, this one, everybody do what. And especially they work for the government. They say all these things belong to government, or akong one, so can take one, don't worry. Nobody know one. So you listen to the thought that way, you get yourself into trouble. Because the evil intent is already negative, full of delusion, selfishness, evil intent. So whatever you do, it will come back to you. Do good because good, do evil because evil. So not worthwhile. Okay? Okay, with that, I think we will stop here. So we are at 2.5. At 2.5, we leave it for next chapter because this one is a very interesting topic. 2.5 is about the difference between Pure Land, Western Paradise, and Nibbana. Because somebody asked the question, can you explain the difference between Pure Land teaching that talks about the Western Paradise, 西方世界, and Nibbana is taught by Sakyamuni Buddha. So they thought these two are different. That's why they asked the question. You can't blame them because there is a lot of misconception about the Pure Land teaching. And Pure Land teaching is part of Mahayana teaching. In fact, a lot of masters or teachers of the Mahayana tradition, finally, after they develop great understanding of the teaching, they still prefer Pure Land. Like Amitabha Buddha, finally, he tends towards the Pure Land teaching. That's why he has what we call in his vow, the Pure Land. He got 48 major vow. And one of them is to create Pure Land for cultivator of the way to awaken much easier and faster. So all this is a matter of understanding. Yeah? For those who are new, who need instruction, maybe I give you some simple instruction. Yeah? To develop this awareness within, you need to have understanding, like I always explain. You meditate with understanding. So like that teaching explanation, awareness-based meditation means this meditation help you to develop awareness within. And you use this awareness within to meditate. That's why it's called awareness-based meditation. You don't go and use your thought to meditate. This is where the big difference is. Thought-based meditation and awareness-based meditation are totally different. When you are aware without thought and you use that stabilized inner awareness to observe, to insight into phenomena and to awaken, and that is the awareness-based meditation, developing insight, developing wisdom, developing understanding. Whereas the other one is thought-based. You use the thought to verbalize. Yeah. And when you verbalize through so-called method, technique, and instruction to note this, note that, and all things, you are creating more and more thought. When you are creating more and more thought, how can you be aware? That is very straightforward, isn't it? Like I always explain, man can only do one thing at a time. Either you are silent within the moment, so that you can be aware of what is going on, or you are lost in thought straight away. Lost in thought means your mind wanders off and you lose focus. You lose the ability to be attentive, to stay within the moment in awareness, to understand what is going on within nature, within the moment. So when you are lost in thought, what happens is you become preoccupied with your thought process. When you are preoccupied with your thought process, creating all the stirring reaction and emotion, then how can you be aware? You become heedless. There's a thought-based meditation lead to more and more knowledge, but not wisdom. Wisdom, you need the silent mind to awaken. The silent mind is the mind that is beyond thought, beyond time, beyond psychological time. When you think, you create psychological time. Your thought process triggers psychological time. And psychological time is what the mundane manifestation is all about. The mundane mind create mundane thinking, stirring, emotion, all the movement within existence. So a lot of things that arise within life can only be understood when we are just silently aware to observe. When we observe with a silent mind, we see things as they are. Then we come to understand clearly what is going on within life. Who are we? What are we? And how we function as a human being. Then we can witness the arising and passing away of thought process, the consciousness and its content. So all this is what awareness-based meditation is all about. So to develop this well, you just follow the four support that I teach. It's easiest. It will settle down very fast. Yeah. First support is relax body and mind, completely relax. When you are relaxed, you cannot think. It's to recuperate your body and mind. When you don't think, there is less stress, less problem. When you are relaxed, you become very quiet, very peaceful. That's why relaxation is very good. It's a good way of recuperating, recovering, developing the quiet mind, the tranquil mind, the silent mind. Then the second support is maintain awareness. Whatever arises within our six sense bases, maintain awareness. Yeah. Don't allow it to distract you. That's why I say aware, finish. Aware, finish. And when you are meditating with the awareness, don't try to know all things or do anything. Because the trying to know or the doing is always by the thought. When the thought is active, you cannot be aware. So maintaining awareness is not to create more thought, not to arise more thinking, just silent within, maintain awareness. And whatever arise, aware, finish. Don't let it continue. Then by doing that, this thinking mind or mundane activity, which is moving within you, because most of you are not able to be in the state of awareness or mindfulness while living life. Most of you are heedless unless you have trained yourself. So the untrained mind think a lot, heedless. So this heedless thinking will continue to move because of the momentum created, the habitual tendency come from your constant reaction to sense experience, your stirring of the mind, creating all the reality, verbalization, chattering, and all those things. The mind is like non-stop thinking, creating all the emotion and all those things. then the views, opinion, conditioning, and belief system, they constantly arise to create more thinking. So when you start to silence within, you start to observe all this. Then by not doing anything, by not feeding it with any more thought energy or thinking energy, then the mind will slow down, slow down, slow down until that thought becomes very quiet, very still, very subtle. Then suddenly, like, everything stops. Like you can realize the silence within your own inner mind. So when the thought stops, it's like Sankara activity all stop. Then like there is a quiet moment within. And that quiet moment is the tranquil stillness of your nature. And that is your true mind. Because there was the state before the arising of thought, before the mundane activity come to be. So realize that. Stabilize that. The third support is to stabilize this awareness. The moment you realize this is a sign of good progress, means your thought activity has slowed down. Then there is nothing inside there, very quiet. Then you continue to rest there, relax. Then if you want to contemplate, you can. If you want to continue to silently stabilize it, to observe, to understand what is going on, you can. To contemplate, I always advise Kayamita, who has the ability to be there, to inquire, who are you without thought? Or without thought, who are you? Means in that state of tranquility and stillness, where just the awareness nature remains, ask yourself, who are you? What are you? Then observe clearly how thought arises from that nature very, very fast and very quickly. How the movement. Then you will see clearly between the two. Then you realize you got two minds. One is the tranquil, still, awareness nature, the silent mind. The other one is the thought that arises from that nature. Via the karmic activity and movement, which most people are hardly aware. And when you understand you have two minds, then you start to understand the Buddha's teaching. When the Buddha mentioned under Dhammapada verse 1 and 2, that our mind is a foreigner of all things, mind is chief, when mind arises, all things arise. And that one is the mano, which is the mundane mind, the thinking mind. Not the true mind, not the silent mind. Whereas the silent mind or the true mind has no word, no concept, no thought process, nothing. It's just that nature. So these two, you need to develop the clear understanding. And it can only come about through this awareness-based meditation to see this clearly. Without this, it's not easy. Then the fourth support you don't have to do now for new people, only those who have the understanding and ability to silence their mind until the awareness nature has developed, until they have very stable inner awareness. Then you can do the fourth support, which is trust, T-R-U-S-T. Trust your nature to do the meditation. Means silent everything, stay at the heart area, and don't try to know, don't try to do. Just let whatever manifests to move. Then when you are able to be with the sati or mindfulness most of the time, then that sati will start to develop its own movement and activity. And then just let it be. Let the nature move. Then it will do whatever it wants to do because it knows what it needs to do. Yeah. Then not long, you can stay in that state. It will detect the gateway. Then a lot of beautiful things will happen. Yeah. And whatever yin yang energy from the external, they will melt into it. Yeah. You can do that. My nature, so do you. Rejoice. Yeah. So today, maybe the instruction, I will stop here so that you can continue with your 45 minutes of awareness-based meditation. You can now slowly, mindfully, come out of the meditation. Try to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness, inner awareness that you have developed for as long as you can. These are the meditative mind state that you need to retain while living life. So if you cannot develop the stability of inner peace, inner calmness, inner awareness, and inner mindfulness while you are in the form of meditation, it's very difficult for you to develop them in the daily life. So to be heedful in the midst of life is what you need. If you develop the ability to be heedful while in the meditative state, is already good enough. But to be able to at the same time develop this so-called mindfulness, the stability of it while in the midst of life is the most important aspect of the training. So to develop that, you need to stabilize the sati until your mind enters sati while you are doing the formal meditation, either bowing or kaya nupassana or even the anapanasati. Whatever you do, maintain the inner awareness until it's very stable, until the mind settle down and become very quiet, very still, until mind enters sati. When mind enters sati, it means whatever you do in the midst of life, everything will be in sati. Means all your activity, the kaya activity, movement, action, they will be in the state of sati. Then everything you see, you will be in the state of sati. Everything you hear is in the state of sati. Smell, taste, tactile, or thought process, everything is in sati. Means the silent mind in sati is aware of seeing, aware of hearing, smell, taste, tactile, and thought process. And this awareness is specific phenomenal awareness. It will flow with nature's condition. Whatever arises, the awareness is there. That's it. Even kaya, same. Then later on, when you go into the mind, the feeling that arises, the emotion that arises, you can be aware. That's why when you develop Vedana no pasana, or mindfulness of feeling, the Buddha say, when feeling arise, aware, mindful. Then when this feeling has become pleasant feeling, or unpleasant feeling, or neutral feeling, aware. Aware means you develop the sati or mindfulness to be aware that your original mind that is without all this movement has already stirred and become pleasant feeling or unpleasant feeling. And if you have the understanding of the teaching, you will know pleasant feeling is attachment to the feeling you like, which is sensual desire. It's a mental hindrance. Even unpleasant feeling is an aversion towards that sensation or feeling, and that is ill will, dislike for that feeling. So like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant, they are both the mental hindrance of sensual desire and ill will. Then even neutral feeling, there is avijja within. When you have indifference, means you neither like or dislike, indifferent, there is still delusion there, avijja, self-delusion. So that type of neutral feeling is not born of wisdom, not like the seven factors of enlightenment, where there is the last factor of enlightenment called equanimity or upekkha. Upekkha is equanimity of mind born of wisdom, not the one born of indifference. So when feeling has become pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, there are still delusion there. There are still sensual desire and ill will there. So when this arises, what does it mean? Means you have arisen the mental hindrance, and it will hinder your mind from entering the meditative state. So if throughout the day you keep on entertaining your life experiences, we are reacting to what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile feel and think, with this duality of like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant, means you are creating mental hindrance throughout the day. And this will become habitual if you do it for a long time. That's why your habitual reaction and stirring of the mind become like you cannot control. This is your habit, this is your character, this is what you always do. So developing the inner awareness, stability of it, to observe all this and understand how you are conditioned into all this mental hindrance are very important understanding of cultivation. So now we will continue our second session. Second session is about meditation reporting. You have any meditation question or any meditation experience that you want to ask me, then I will guide you. Then you can also ask me any question regarding the Buddha's teaching, the Buddha Dharma, or what we share today, if there is anything not clear. Finally, is you all can also share based on your own understanding, means through your cultivation, what you encounter during the meditative training and process, to share their experience so that you can let others learn from you. We call it the Dhamma in daily life, means whatever you experience as Dhamma in the midst of life. And that one is very useful, because that one is the living Dhamma. So what we are developing is the understanding of the living Dhamma. It's not the theoretical Dhamma or thought-based, knowledge-based Dhamma. Okay, we will open up. Anybody who wants to ask any question or report meditation, you can on your mic, then just come in.
I can share just now the experience.
Ah, good. Sadhu. You continue to share. Very good.
Yeah, because of pure awareness.
Ah, sadhu.
There means of it that I just report.
Okay, yeah.
There's
thank
a
you.
Pain sadhu. In my leg.
Oh, because sadhu.
There's a pain in my my feet. It's a pulling nerve.
Yeah, the pulling sensation.
It's just aware.
Yeah,
aware
the awareness
of the,
that
the
is aware nerve. Is not affected on.
Yeah, aware, and then for a short while you go.
Yeah,
it's just aware.
It will go off, and there are understanding behind it. Because when you are aware, relaxed, there is no craving force. The craving force that is attached to that pulling sensation, when you label it as pain or negative feeling, that is a mental hindrance. A lot of meditators doesn't realize. Then they were told very gullibly. They were told to note pain, 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 thinking that it will go away. So now, this is Dhamma understanding. When you label that as pain, 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 what happened to your mind? You create mental hindrance, isn't it? Your pain is a negative sensation, ill will. You dislike that feeling, which you have unknowingly developed as a duality that you accumulated within your meditative training, and you don't like that sensation. You want to push it away. So what happened is, at the mind level, it has become a mental hindrance. And the moment you label it, that mental hindrance of ill will prevent you from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness. That's why people find it very difficult to break through to pain. And they try to endure and become miserable inside the retreat. For your case, because you learn how to be aware, you develop awareness-based meditation, the moment you relax into it and maintain awareness, there is no more craving force there. When there is no more craving force there to label it as pleasant or unpleasant, then what happens is sati take over. And sati is a spiritual faculty. It's not a mental hindrance. So when sati take over, it dissolves. Then you come to realize that sensation that arise, which normal people label as pain, the unpleasant sensation, is actually dependent originating, condition arising, causal phenomena, not a permanent unchanging entity or something intrinsic within you. Before there was pain, there was no pain. So what happened was pain originated or arise through your tactile sensation that the body cannot understand. When the body and mind cannot understand, it will label it such. Then you will try to do something to push it away or fight it, resist it. And that is not meditation. That is not accord and flow. That is resisting, fighting. So what you should do is continue to relax, maintain awareness. And then you realize when sati take over, because you don't have mental hindrance, it's a spiritual faculty, it develops into that silent mind, awareness nature, before the thought, before the perception, before the words. So this will enable you to experience what you describe, Cindy, as suddenly you feel that thing gone, no more. It's because that which create pain is actually when you are mindful and aware, you can see the pulling sensation. It originates from your bodily condition, which is not relaxed enough. And the mental hindrance is there. That's why it hold on to it, it cling on to it, and it create that resistance to the flow of qi. And because your qi cannot flow, then that sensation keep on coming. But if you are mindful, you can be aware of it. Aware, aware. It's moment to moment. It's not really a permanent thing. But because you are not in the state of relax, and you don't know how to maintain awareness, so that's a takeover. That's why that one prevent a lot of meditator from breaking free from pain. So for your case, when you can have the understanding to do it, that's why my nature rejoices. Sadhu to you, Cindy. Very good. Sadhu. You continue.
Thank you. That's all. That's what I did.
Oh, that's all. Okay,
in
very
fact,
good.
In fact,
thank
in fact,
you for
in
the
fact,
good sharing.
If the pain go off, and then, as I say, I'm aware.
Yeah,
so
and you feel very good.
Minutes,
yeah.
It come back again, one, and not the pain will come back again.
Definitely, because you must
yeah.
relax
then you
enough.
Then awareness, then you go off.
Yeah, then it go off again. Because when you are aware, you don't allow that ill will, dislike of that feeling, you don't label it, then it will not come back and haunt you. You just endure it, relax with understanding. Sometimes you can laugh at it. Because the best way to break it is Last time, I remember 1988 or towards the end of 1988, I was at a three-day, two-night retreat. Then my teacher, Ajayantra, was holding that retreat, the weekend retreat. They call it the eight precept retreat. So what happened was he said, body is a body, mind is mind. Body is not the mind. The mind is not the body. But we choose to take care of mind. Your mind is most important. Like the Buddha said, mind is a foreigner, all things mind is cheap. When mind arise, all things arise. Yeah. He just said this now. Body is just a body. Mind is mind. Mind never the body, body never the mind. We choose to take care of mind. Finish. So what happened was, I was meditating. Then after 1.5 day, almost the second day already, like every cultivator, there was pain. So in order to understand it, I relaxed into it. But the pain was, like you say, keep on coming back, keep on coming back. So what happened was, I reflected on what my teacher told me, Ajayantra. Body is a body. Mind is mind. Mind never the body. Body never mind. So I developed the faith in him. And with that faith and understanding, I make a vow. I say, I will continue to endure this pain until I understand how to actually overcome it or how to deal with it. Yeah. Then I tell myself, even if my leg, well, the thought will arise and tell you, you continue, you will paralyze your leg or something very bad will happen to your leg. Yeah. But I was so determined, I said, paralyze, paralyze, but I have faith. So I sit through. So what happened was, when it reached a peak of that so-called pain or sensation, although with mindfulness awareness, in the state of relax, I was able to endure. But normal people would have given up because it was so severe. So what happened was, after about 1.5 hours, I remember, suddenly, that so-called sensation of pain flashed through my mind. There was a bright light, in my mind, complete burst in bright light, like manifest very fast. Within that instant, you know what happened? There was a transformation in consciousness. All of a sudden, the next moment I become aware, I realized that so-called sensation is completely gone, like vaporized, like nothing there. Then I was, in a way, curious, what happened? But then I realized my mind, that awareness, that mindfulness was so powerful and so strong and so clear, it's like a magnifying glass. So I move it down to the lake there to see what actually happened. And to my surprise, that so-called pulling sensation, everything was still there. But there was no feeling or sensation of the so-called pain or whatever. Because of that insight, the flash and the shift in consciousness, what happened was my mind became totally different. Then I saw how all the pulling sensation was the constriction within my physical body. Then I just relax into it. Then I saw it disappearing. The whole thing gone. Then after that, there was so much joy. It's like, this is it. Because that so-called sensation was tuned to the reason that I cannot relax deep enough to let it go through, to let it flash through, or to let the chi flow. Then it accumulates and becomes resistant. After that, I can sit for hours without worrying about pain since that year 1989 until I think the recent few years when I decided not to be a hero to endure pain. Because if you sit for too long, if you don't know how to deal with the physical body, I was told by somebody who know how to treat this meditator with problem of sitting too long. If you sit too long, the lactic acid will build up or no, especially at the point where your buttock is with the cushion. No? Then it may develop into a posture problem. Yeah? We tend to like to sit on the point where most of the weight can go there. Even the physio people will know. That is, your spine at the back has already developed that so-called slight imperfection of shape. Then because of that, it will cause you to have leg pain and all those things. Then it's injury. If you sit very long, it can actually give rise to spinal problem. Your muscle will like get entangled or they call you one frozen, I don't know. Then like stiff or whatever. Then it is not relaxed, no. And then the muscle cannot actually support your pelvic and all that. Then you start to have this type of posture problem. Then sometimes it affects your gait. You cannot walk. Then you need to go and see physio, or you need to get treatment, and you need to even see the chiropractor and all those things. And some of my classmates, they go for operation. Then all this can develop, especially office worker, you sit too long. But because of what happened after that year, 1988, I got no more problem with sitting. The pain, before it can come, I can laugh at it. And I can just relax into it. Then it just disappears. But don't try to be a hero, like I say. Don't sit too long. That's why after the last few years, I think 4 or 5 years ago, last time at the retreat, you can see when I teach meditation, I can sit for 3-4 hours, no problem. But as you age, no point. Don't be a hero. Yeah, the body is still a body. So I need to take care of this part of the problem of the body. That's why after that, I tend to sit on a chair. Nowadays, you see me sit on a chair because I don't want to risk hurting that physical body. Even though you can tell me the Buddha recommend cross leg and all that thing, it's okay. But the posture is up to you. It is like the Buddha said, whatever posture, whether standing, sitting, walking, or lying down, you can be in a meditative state. So sati sampajana also clearly defined that mindfulness can be developed, leading to heedfulness whenever you are living life. Means anytime, anywhere, any posture, you can develop mindfulness leading to heedfulness. So all this understanding are very important. So I did that. After that, I got no more problem. But Cindy, please, don't try to force it. Don't just because you heard what I say, you go and do it. You can try, but remember, just do to your ability to understand. Yeah, as long as you understand, that's it. Finish.
I sat on a chair. I didn't sit on a lotus.
Oh,
I sat
you
on
did
a chair.
Cross your leg. Then no
I
problem.
I didn't. I'm not able to because I'm at L4, L5. I sat on a chair. The thing is that my feet, I think there's something is twitch and there's a pull of nerve on my
that's
feet.
That one is easier to do.
I cannot sit cross-legged. No way.
Yeah. No problem. Don't have to sit cross-legged. Now, what I want to share with you is There is a real life incident involving a monk, a Theravada monk. Remember, he is from Canada or what? He went to Burma and do this retreat and all those things. You know, they are long walking, sitting, all those things. And he tried to fight the pain. So what happened was, he himself shared. We heard from him, the horse monk, not from somebody else. He said, he endured through the pain. It was so painful, you know what happened? He fainted, the monk. Fainted. And lost consciousness, I don't know for how long, I forgot already. Then after that, he recovered. Then he shared with us, he said, don't try to be a hero if you cannot do it. So all these are things that can happen. So my advice is, if you go for a retreat or whatever, always remember one thing. You go to retreat to train your mind to develop the meditative understanding to free, means the wisdom. And when you are at the retreat meditating, you're supposed to develop the good spiritual faculty and mind state to be at peace with all things, to have the spiritual joy, the piti, the virya, the saddha, and the continuous sati or mindfulness, and then the samadhi. You don't go to a retreat to torture yourself and make yourself miserable. Understand? If you find that you cannot relax and cannot meditate, my advice is just go for a walk, a mindful walk, and that will help. A relaxed, mindful. Then you come back. You find that you are less tense. You are more relaxed. That's why the key is relax. When you can relax, mindfulness can fall into place. You can maintain awareness after that. Then you don't have to develop the aversion towards the painful sensation. I realize a lot of people who go to retreat cannot tolerate that pain. But the pain can be very, very severe, very intense. So this is my advice. So make a note. You meditate to free yourself, to develop good mind state, not torture yourself, harm yourself, and make yourself miserable until you are so so miserable. The word is miserable. In fact, a lot of people who go to retreat, they may report, wow, during the retreat, they experience what mindset was. But the suffering they go through, they don't tell you. You meet some sincere one, you try to talk about it, and then they will tell you how much pain, how difficult it is to endure through. And before even the retreat started, a lot of people cannot take it. The thought keep on telling them, you better pack up and leave. instead of having a nice coffee at home, watching TV and relax environment, you come here to suffer for what? So a lot of this thought will play trick on you. Then some, before the retreat end, you know what happened? They will have this funny thought, retreat ending soon. There is this char kway teow that I like, or this food that I like. Oh, then inside their head, they plan all this already. So if you are not aware, you don't know the movement of all this activity. So this is what sensual desire you will arise. But please don't get me wrong. It doesn't mean that you cannot reflect on all this, plan all this, and let this thought arise. But do not be heedless. Heedless means don't be lost in thought. Be aware, mindfully contemplate, reflect. Then when you know this thought come, aware, finish. It will have no power over you. You want to have char kway teow, so what? That is your preference. But don't be conditioned by it until you cannot meditate, you cannot listen, you cannot attentively benefit from the retreat. No, that is not the way. To benefit from the retreat is to maintain awareness, maintain heedfulness while you are there. Then silently, attentively meditate, develop the understanding, then contemplate, reflect, inquire, and stabilize those understanding. Then whatever you do, mindful, aware, and you will benefit a lot. And your mind state will become very beautiful. Then you realize you hardly have any problem. When you meditate, there's a lot of joy. You like to meditate. Then meditation is like, very natural, very simple. And this is what understanding can bring about, the big difference between the one that don't have the understanding and the cultivator that has the understanding. That's why the big difference between awareness-based meditation and thought-based meditation is the awareness one is heedful. They develop heedfulness to live the life of a heedful person. Most of the time when they are heedful, they are without thought. They are most of the time mindful, aware, without thought. Whereas the heedless, thought-based one, they think a lot. The mind manifests very fast. The sankhara activity, the habitual tendency, the views, opinion, conditioning, and belief system from the memory and the thought process, they are very active. That's why they are heedless. They hardly live life. And most of the time, they are not aware at all. They are not with the moment. They are living at the forehead, the thought there, with the senses. Keep on repeating the heedless manifestation that the mundane mind create for them to delude them, to cause delusion in them. And through that, they get themselves entangled within the phenomenal world of consciousness or life itself. So this is what will happen. Very good. Okay.
All right. They're just... want to share some things more. Usually my mother last time will be cooking all the time. Then after she had her fall a few years back, my father took over la.
You told her before, yes.
But recently also because he's not well, right? So I took over.
Correct.
Yeah. So that means now my parents permanently, they will not cook anymore.
Go ahead. Get the, what they call, what you call, why mine is what?
Takeaway.
Yeah, your house opposite only. You got so many restaurants there.
Lunch, usually we will buy something from outside. If weekend, we will go out.
Go out, yeah. Because you are not working, you and your brother can still take them out, yeah. Good.
But dinner, I will cook like, because not all the time we will eat out. Like.
Yeah.
I experienced something different. Last time when my parents were still cooking, I do cook once but very rarely.
Yeah.
But that time when I cook, I don't like it.
Yeah, your aversion. It's like a burden to you, like you don't feel like doing it, you have the thought that will condition you to think, this one my parents are supposed to do, why I have to be involved, you know. You at that time you don't understand, but now after you develop the Dhamma understanding, have gratitude towards your parents for what they have done for you. They not only give us life, you know, give birth to us. No. Since birth until now, they have cared for you, sacrificed for you, provide for you. Not only raise you up, give you all the care, the love, the sacrifice, and what we call the education. Then they are full of concern and loving kindness towards you. They try to like let you have the good life. provide you with the best in life when they can afford it and all those things. Then we look back when we are young, before we actually finish our academic life or get a job outside, our career life has not started. We actually need our parents' support, and that gratitude towards them is something that cultivator will always have, because like the Buddha said, you cannot repay your parents' kindness even if you carry them on your shoulder for the rest of your life. The only way to repay them for all the sacrifice and love is to bring them to the Dhamma, or to let them understand the Dhamma. So that is what the teaching actually mentioned. But what we need to understand is, as a cultivator, we have gratitude towards whoever who help us, love us, sacrifice for us, and do a lot of wholesome good things towards us. Not only our parents, but of course our parents are the one that can really sacrifice and do all this. That's why parent is really, to a cultivator who understand. Even I remember my teacher Ajahn Yantra and also the Master Xuan Hua. Master Xuan Hua, when the mother passed away, he determined to stay at the mother's grave for 3 years of cultivating in Manchuria, in the deep open graveyard there. So cold. And yet he endured for 3 years now. Of course, that was his vow. And he progressed in his meditative experience also because of that. So many cultivator of the way, you can hear their story of their parent when the understanding is there. Huh? So fast, huh? 6 o'clock, yeah. Oh, sorry, Manyan. Huh? I need to pass it to you. Huh? So now okay. You continue. Then maybe summarize. Huh? Then we end. Oh, so fast.
Just want to highlight that the feeling is different. Last time, yeah. Maybe by the time I finish, I will feel so like very tired. And really, yeah. Really tired. I will like, feel like sleeping, dropping down. But now, yeah. Even after work also tired, right? I can still do it. And then I don't feel, I don't have that, not to say unhappiness.
That is because you have the understanding. That's why with the understanding, the mind becomes different. You can endure and yet you don't feel tired. Yeah, when you do with understanding, there is joy. You are cooking for your parents. You are taking over the role to care for them. Like what the Buddha mentioned in the Sigalawada Sutta. Now is the time for the children to care for the parents. That is what Sigalawada Sutta on duty and all those things. You have your duty when you are parents. You have your duty when you are a child, even between employer and employee. So all this duty is very important. That's why my teacher Ajahn Yantra, he always used this word. Right duty is right Dhamma understanding. And he, in a shortcut way, he always say, right duty is right Dhamma. Because in Thai, Dhamma is called Dhamma. So when you have the Dhamma, you will know how to do your right duty. It's right duty towards the nature's law that governs life and existence, especially the law of karma, the law of cause and effect. Paticca Samuppada and all those things. So when you understand all this, then you understand life, then you can live the noble life. So all these are very useful. Very good, Manyan. Sadhu.
Yeah, Sadhu Radio, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Yeah, thank you for the good, short but concise sharing. Yeah? So let us rejoice with Cindy and Manyan. Yeah? Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, now we will share merit, transfer merit, then we will end. Akra Satta Chya Bhumata Deva Naga Mahindika Punyang Tang Anumoditwa Chirang Rakantu Loka Sasana Ittavata Chamehi Sampadan Punya Sampadan Sabbe Deva Anumodantu Sabba Sampati Siddhiya Idang me nyatinang hotu sukhita hontu nyatayo. Idang me nyatinang hotu sukhita hontu nyatayo. Idang me nyatinang hotu sukhita hontu nyatayo. Deo wasatu kalena sasa sampati hitu cha. Vito bhavatu loko cha raja bhavatu dhammiko imina punyang kamina mame bala samagamo sattang samagamo hotu yahava nivana patiya sadhu sadhu sadhu. Okay, you all can now pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha, Kuan Bodhisattva, and all the worthy ones. Then we shall end the whole Zoom session. Sadhu, and thank you for your participation. Sadhu.